Welcome to the Center for Internet Security's podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we are at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or even running a state or local government. Join CIS's Sean Atkinson and Tony Sager as they discuss trends and threats, ways to implement controls and infrastructure, explore best practices, and interview experts in the industry. We are here to bring clarity to these complex issues to bring confidence in the connected world.
Hello and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security. I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Randy Rose, the VP of Security Operations and Intelligence. Randy, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Sean?
I am hanging in there. And I'm excited today because we're talking AI. Right. I mean, if we're not talking about it, somebody else is. It's a very popular topic in the industry. But wanted to talk to you today and really focus around Defender capability on what other defenders are utilizing AI in this space for and how are they using it and applying it to the Defender's dilemma or security problems or building innovative solutions. So with that, Randy, I want to get your thoughts as we approach this topic, really starting to think about now where we see integration of AI and its transformational process. How has that affected the landscape for cybersecurity defenders?
It's a good question. You know, obviously with ChatGPT and Claude and Google Gemini, Google Bard really, before Gemini, and Microsoft Copilot, there's been a lot of focus on, among others, there's been a lot of focus on the open availability, the public availability of large language models and generative AI, image generators and all of those things. But AI has really been something that's been incorporated, various elements of AI at least have been incorporated in cybersecurity tools for several years now. So though the public access to a lot of these things is relatively new, security companies have been thinking about this problem for a long time. So there's a number of tools. In fact, I mean, there's a number of companies out there that have really leverage the power of machine learning or reinforcement learning and different flavors of AI over time to build really effective cybersecurity tools for defenders. Some of them are in use, within the DoD. Some are in use in the commercial sector already. Some are doing some really interesting things, like using AI concepts and machine learning concepts to better facilitate penetration assessments, for example. So, this kind of thing's like it's really been out there in the wild for a long time. It just hasn't been known broadly to the public. If you're not in the cybersecurity community or the IT community and leveraging these technologies, you just might not be aware of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny, we were having a conversation last week and it was it seems like it's a new topic, and I was coming from RSA, obviously that was, one of the buzzwords, or, you could play buzzword bingo and, have bingo in a few minutes with everything AI. And it's when we kind of step back and think about AI and its utility, but we also have to include in there machine learning, right? It's a subset of the underlying veil of AI. And, we've seen that in the industry for a number of years. And ultimately, it leads me to where, from a threat detection perspective, we've seen it in EDR products and really across the industry. So as AI obviously has been embraced or is necessarily now more well known to those inside and outside of the industry, how is it starting to either improve or augment threat detection? And does that then really, is it a multiplier, a catalyst to faster response times versus what we would have seen, maybe 5-10 years ago? What are your thoughts there?
It's certainly an improvement, from 5 or 10 years ago. I think you hit one word that you just said is the key here. You said augment, right? So it is improving threat detection, but specifically where AI and machine learning come in, and not just the threat detection and the threat intelligence space, but in cybersecurity in general. And even thinking outside of cybersecurity and just, application to business, application to, personal education and all the things that you can do with large language models and Gen AI, it's really about augmenting your capability you know, as a human analyst, as a human being, as a, maybe an artist. Singers are using it to help prompt ideas for lyrics, or you know, get past a hurdle. Yeah, maybe there's a musician who plays by ear. They know they like the sound of certain things, but they don't really have a music theory knowledge, so they don't know the chords that they can work with within a structure. They have an idea already, and they're saying, "Hey, these are the chords I'm playing with. What are some other options for my bridge?" You know, so that idea of like augmenting your capability already, that the skills that you already have as an individual or as a team, leveraging AI to augment that, you know, the human element's really, really important still. Just like you might have a brand new staff member, you might give them an assignment early on. You're not just going to let a brand new staff member run your entire program, right? You leverage their knowledge, their skills, and in many ways, their innocence, right? They might come up with something you never came up with because of the things you take for granted as an expert, but you can take that and with some oversight, with some interaction, core interaction with the rest of your team, you're actually able to take their idea and turn it into something that works really well. And I think that's the key for a lot of organizations that are using AI, is it's not about AI replacing your ability to do threat detection. It's about AI augmenting your ability to do better threat detection at scale and reduce some time, right? So one of the things, the real values with AI is that as an individual human analyst, I can only look at so much stuff in a given period of time. But the amount of data that we're dealing with today is insane. The average human takes in something like 74 gigabytes of data per day, which 200 years ago was the amount of data an educated person would take in their entire lifetime. And we're taking that in on a daily basis. So then you put a person that's the average person. You put somebody that's like a SOC analyst, that their job is just to look at data all day long. The sheer, you know, capacity that they have to chop through to make an assessment is ridiculous. So that's where AI can really help tee up the things that we need a human to look at. And I say AI really in those cases, it's primarily machine learning, right? So you have these patterns in place, you have these workflows in place to tease out the things that are actually important for an analyst to look at and really spend that valuable human analyst time focused in those areas. Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that was awesome because it really conceptualizes the approach. It's not necessarily the replacement in that area. It's the, as we mentioned, augmentation, but really is a tool in the tool set for us to, one, as we receive more telemetry, right, and start to then want to assess pattern matching in that approach for either, you know, the outlier detection from an anomaly perspective or even behavior over a period of time. I think ultimately what we have is a capability that can identify areas or maybe subtract all of the noise to allow then the SOC analyst to focus on what is interesting in the data versus, you know, the mass or the entirety of the underlying data set. Does that follow an approach that you believe is successful, Randy?
Yeah, I like how you use a phrase of pattern matching, and you think about the scale of some of these things, right? Take it out of cybersecurity context again and put it in a doctor's office, right? A doctor could be really, really experienced in their field, but not have the latest information available to them. No matter how good a doctor is, they'll never have all of the latest, you know, research and studies, you know, at the ready. So think about how AI can help take a patient's symptoms and run it across all of the latest data to find patterns that the doctor, no matter how good they are, would miss. So that's a really interesting concept. You take that and lift and shift that into the cybersecurity space. It's the same thing. A CTI analyst can only take in as much information as they have time, as they have access to, right? Collection is actually a huge challenge in cybersecurity in general, particularly in the intelligence space. So when you're talking CTI, it's like, what are you collecting? And in a lot of cases today, we're collecting way more. You think about traditional intelligence, the problem was, we couldn't collect all the things we needed to collect, but in this interconnected world that we live in, it's actually a problem of we're collecting too much stuff and we don't know what's useful anymore. Well, all of it could be useful, but to a human, it's hard to pick out the things that are really useful. To a machine, it doesn't matter if it's useful or not on ingest. It can find useful data based on that pattern matching, based on how we've trained the model, based on, you know, if trained correctly, it's learning itself to find things that are useful that it can tee up you know, for a manual, an analyst to look at manually.
Definitely. No, absolutely. I mean, ultimately, it gives us really a capability to assess new levels of competency, really, in an environment, and then also where there are identifications. And one of the things I know you would mention that we should discuss is some of the security researchers' work in this space as well has been eye-opening, because I think there are new concepts in terms of the application of certain capabilities from a large language model perspective or utilizing technologies in that space. And I think ultimately it's leading us to a path where kind of the doors are open. And in a lot of cases, you know, the modern SOC analyst, and I may be abstracting here, Randy, and you'll correct me, but I'm thinking in this case, what the modern SOC analyst becomes is more data-centric and data analytical, obviously understanding attack patterns, right? That there's always that need to understand what's going on with the bits and bytes, but to abstract that is to then also seek through the machine learning process, but also contribute to it and look at the innovation in the space and the ability to perform. And frankly, I'll say this, there's never been a better time to apply a data analytical approach to security research than we have now and the tools that necessarily we can access via an API and things of that nature. What are your thoughts there, Randy, and what you've seen in terms of security research?
Yeah, you know, the researchers that are out there, are some of them are just coming up with some really brilliant things. There's a senior, I think he's a threat researcher with Microsoft, and I'm probably going to pronounce his last name wrong. His name is Thomas Rochia. And he goes by Frogger on GitHub, and he pulled together a really cool list that he maintains. And there's obviously, it's GitHub, so there's a community of contributors who help maintain it. But it's specifically a list of GPT agents for cybersecurity purposes. A lot of them are experimental, right? They're things that researchers are going out there and saying, hey, man, I have this weird problem. I wonder if a large language model can help me. And so they're programming in specialized GPTs for tracking vulnerabilities or better understanding the intricacies of structured analytic techniques, you know, from a, you know, cyber threat intelligence standpoint. They're looking at specific GPTs trained on security controls for homes and small businesses. There's things that are focused on just the education piece. There's actually some that, you know, kind of in your lane, Sean, there's things that are focused on GDPR and privacy legislation and all those things in the governance, risk, and compliance space. So he has this amazing list of, you know, tools out there. There's even some, I don't know if he's tracking one of them, but there's one called, I think it's Lakera, that is it's designed for analysts to go after and try and see if you can trick the Gen AI into giving you the password to get to the next level. It's like a gamified version of hacking the agent, hacking a GPT. So there's some really interesting things out there that I think are taking some of the tools and data and research that we've been building for the last 20 years and making it really accessible. Now, granted, again, I said a lot of them are experimental, so you still have to go in and do your due diligence. You have to understand, is it giving me good language or good responses as I go in and prompt engineer my way through this cybersecurity focused GPT model? Is it giving me good information? You still have to go in and verify all of that. But some of these things are like actually teaching the next generation of security professionals and hackers. It's really, really cool stuff.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, you know, when we, I go back and I think too, as I was, we'll call it growing up in cybersecurity, looking for the resources, right? And, you know, you had your standard approach to certain resources. And now from a defender capability and even security research, you know, ultimately the adage I've mentioned on this podcast a number of times, and we share the same sentiment in terms of, you know, offensive capability and offensive security research helps from a defender perspective, makes us stronger. What are we looking for? What are those behaviors, the tactics, techniques that we should be aware of? And that makes us necessarily from a purple teaming strategy stronger in that space. And I see now that there is such capability and access to be able to not only innovate in the space, but as a field of continuous learning, that these tools are also contributive to, you know, being able to continuously learn. And I think in a lot of cases, it now behooves us to be prompt engineers, to ask the right questions. And like you say, we've got to verify, you know, that there's, you know, in some cases it's untrust, and then we'll also verify what we're receiving. But that we're able to have a dialogue in terms of, like you say, current research as much as possible from obviously the last training session certain programs have been through in terms of building the large language model, but to be able to do that and express it in certain ways in order to receive that information through structured prompt engineering is another skill set, right? You know, we've aligned data analytic capability, even through a data science approach. And you know, we're both fans of the GIAC Machine Learning Engineer certification and the program that David Hosler put together. Absolutely phenomenal for anybody in this space. And it's, do you necessarily need that level of knowledge? No. But once you get into this, I mean, it's you're always looking for more. And there's always a response when you're looking for more. There is so much information to consume. It's now, and I'll go back to the point you made previously with intelligence. It was back in the day, it was, where do I go to find this? And now it's, what am I curating in order to understand what is the right information? How is it, you know, being taught? So it, you know, as a visual learner, I need to see visualization of certain things, and being able to get that from these environments, from online, YouTube, you know, books being made available, free PDFs. I know you share your library of data science, security, intelligence, and which is hugely contributive to everybody's continuous learning. And I think that set a new stage for us, Randy, right? It's now trying to keep up with these security researchers and all the great work that they're doing. And, you know, you could look at GitHub every day, and it's kind of like the CVEs we see every day. There's new innovation in this space, and it's so interesting to see. And it's a good feeling that people are trying to tackle this problem.
Yeah, I mean, think about just what you just mentioned, like the library, for example. Within that library, there's probably, I probably have 400, you know, books in there. That it's too much for anybody to consume. You know, we have some folks on our team that just read an incredible amount of books and articles and stuff on a daily basis. But even those that love reading, that consume when they're not working, they're just consuming this stuff, you know, in the, I don't know, 16 hours or whatever the difference is between, you know, their hours on the clock and their hours on, they get a little bit of sleep in there, and then they're just, you know, growing their skill set because the people in this field generally tend to be pretty obsessive. Even they can't consume all of that stuff. So that's one of the values, I think, with these models too, is you can distill down what you need to know in a massive amount of data down to 500 words, right? You can go, that prompt engineering thing you were talking about is so important. You can go into a large language model, and you can give it a very specific command. I need to understand this key concept of, you know, let's say, you know, this code, this secure coding concept, and I need it in 500 words or less. And I need you to explain it to me like I'm a kindergartner. And the large language model will do that to you, you know, for you. It crafts that up. That's not always great. You have to go back and really get a good understanding of how accurate is that information. But that's one of the beautiful things about prompt engineering, is you can give these Gen AI models, you can give them a character, you know, pretend to be a grandma, explaining to their grandchild how SQL injection works. And it's the funniest thing. I mean, you learn about SQL injection, but you learn about it as a, you know, a child getting explained by his doting grandmother. So it's really interesting, you know, depending on your flavor and your style of learning, it can be really beneficial. I know a lot of folks who were not developers, who are using ChatGPT and Claude and some of these other models to teach them how to code in a way, and they're learning in a way that they never could have for free. I mean, it, you know, or some of them might be paying a subscription service, but it's very cheap compared to going to school to go get your computer science degree, learn how to code, and you're stuck, you know, learning C++ or Java and something you didn't you weren't really that interested in doing. You just want to learn, you have a particular application, you want to learn Python, you can go into ChatGPT and have it teach you Python. And it's like having a personal tutor. It's really interesting, right? These are amazing models and use cases. So it's definitely changing the game. You mentioned YouTube, right? I mean, like, just think about a few years ago when YouTube started, right? It was like pure entertainment. But nowadays you go on YouTube and you have a home maintenance problem or I have a riding mower. I had to replace the carburetor on. I had no idea how to do that, but YouTube does, right? So it's that same idea, and I bet ChatGPT would have walked me through it too. I didn't think to ask. I just went on YouTube, but it's the same kind of concept, right? It's a tool in your toolbox.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And and it's kind of that tool for every situation, right? It's the universal tool.
It's a universal tool. It's a Swiss Army knife of knowledge.
Exactly. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Supposedly it's getting dumber, but so we got to be careful about that. But.
Well, in fact, we'll talk about that. So then let's talk about then some of the key challenges and limitations. So when we're, the defender faced with underlying issues and we're utilizing AI in the cybersecurity space, is there currently, I don't know if this is true, I'll get your thoughts here, but is there a tendency to be too dependent then on these types of capabilities moving forward to where you've already mentioned there's a verification step that is truly important, right? Because we can have, unforeseen elements introduced and whether it's a poisoning element or other. I'll let you comment on that, Randy, as from the challenges perspective.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just like any technology, I always recommend that we exercise caution when getting in. The challenge with AI is it's not always going to get everything right. So if you just inherently put your trust in whatever response you get out of it, you're going to go down a very dangerous path. So you have to understand, and I know you get this, right? As a CISO, we think in terms of, and I think cybersecurity folks in general, we think in terms of risk tolerance and managing risk in certain environments. So that's something that each individual organization and each individual user of any of these AI applications, whether it's generative AI that you have public access to or a tool that you brought into your environment that has a proprietary machine learning model, you really have to understand what are the risks, the potential risks, and how do we mitigate those in our environment. I mentioned the AI-powered pen testing tools that are out there, that there are some companies that are wildly successful in that space. You really have to work with them to understand what inherent risk you have when you have basically a machine-led penetration assessment in your environment as opposed to a human-led. You bring in risk either way, right? A human penetration tester could take systems down that, unintentionally, that have a business impact in your environment. Could an AI engine do the same thing? Most likely, right? And maybe to an extent, it's more likely that an AI engine might have a solution there because a human might stop and pause and go, I don't know about that. This one seems a little riskier than some of the other things. So that's one of those nuanced things that we really don't fully understand yet. And I mean, even the builders of ChatGPT and Gemini, they point out, right, all of these large language models, they point out these things can make mistakes, right? They essentially went public because we wanted the entire world to help us train the model and beta test. And there were some unforeseen things that happened there, collecting their own information. There was recently one that talked about, a question came up about making pizza, and it was, I think it was Gemini. I can't remember. One of them was, telling the user how much glue to add to their pizza dough. So obviously whether that was a poisoning attack or, some kind of, who knows, right? Some kind of weird thing. But I mean, those are the kinds of things that come up that obviously, hopefully most people are smart enough to know not to add glue to their pizza dough. And that's a silly example.
Yeah.
But what about, other examples? What if thinking about you're creating a lesson plan as a trainer in cybersecurity and you rely heavily on a large language model to build your curriculum. And then you go, well, this was really helpful. It saved me a lot of time. I'm going to have it actually build some of the content. And you don't go in and verify that content, you could be giving people bad information.
Right. Right. No, exactly. Exactly. I think in some cases it's great examples, by the way, because it just aligns to that there is I'll put it this way, maybe a little bit abstract, but we'll go that there is a conscious behind the decision that's being made. Don't rely upon AI to be doing that for you, right? That there is a verification requirement because, as you mentioned, you know, there's hallucinations, right? Just completely outright. It's either the topic that it's recommending, the book, the reference, the recipe, in this case, doesn't exist. Right, it's just not something that exists and can lead us down certain paths that if we're not thinking about it properly and allowing necessarily the machine to do all the thinking and for us to abstract that and, consume as our own intelligence is something that it is truly a balance because what I fear in this space, and this is part of the ethical thoughts in this area as well, is that there's going to be this missing piece of verification the further down this path we go. And ultimately, the models are getting better, right? That there's more information being fed. As you mentioned, you know, it's being released so it can be trained appropriately with interaction, across a you know, many, many millions of people. I think even you saw, you know, there's how quick to 10 million users or how quick to 100 million users, and ChatGPT did it in, you know, weeks versus years for some other products and services.
Yeah, I think it was they had the record for like the fastest adoption of technology. Yeah, I mean, in the modern age.
Exactly.
Pretty impressive.
Exactly. It's great. I mean, it's... But I think it also shows that the utility in that service has to also be taken with a responsibility and that there's an ethical use, right? This is, like you say, the teaching plan, does that have connotations in terms of, well, we certainly should use it as input, but not as necessarily the solution or the final output of that respective requirement in the space being the lesson plan, is that we've got to be we've got to be selective, I think, in terms of both its utility as well as the verification of the output that it's providing. Because remember, ultimately what we're seeing, and I think this is one of the limitations, and I love your thoughts here, Randy, this is the opaque box that we're putting in, right? We do our prompt. Something happens and ultimately we get a response a few seconds later behind the scenes, you know, abstracted, right? It's a level of abstraction that we don't necessarily get to see, but we get to control the input and view the output. Anyway, any thoughts there, Andy?
Yeah, it's funny. I think you're actually arguing for, from a CIS perspective, this definitely checks out. But I think what you're arguing for is controls over this, right? Put some controls around usage, and maybe in this case it's individual controls and organizational controls about, you know, if you're going to use this technology, here are some things that you should understand, here's some bounds, use it to help make templates, use it to help reduce the amount of time you have to do in these rote tasks, but don't take the output as a truth necessarily, right? You have to have that review in place, just like you might do with other controls. You think about financial audits and financial controls in some places. You have two-person integrity for a reason, you know, that somebody isn't cutting a check of the wrong kind or cutting checks to the wrong organization or wrong individual. It's the same kind of idea or concept here with AI. You can put some controls around, you know, what are the proper uses of generative AI in your organization for your mission. And I think the piece you mentioned about transparency is really important too, because, you know, in a way, when you interact with let's say an expert in a particular field, you don't really know what goes on behind in the mind's eye or whatever, right? You're putting trust into the expert. If you bring somebody in as a consultant, you are putting trust in them and they're giving you some advice. And in most cases, you're going to try to implement the advice as close to, you know, as that consultant recommended it. And I think that to an extent, that same thing is happening with AI. A lot of people are just putting blind trust in the output, just like you might put blind trust in a security expert or some consulting expert of a different flavor. And really, it's about measuring, or maybe I would say putting in a certain amount of scientific skepticism and to those outputs, right? What are the things that, okay, this is good advice, whether from a consultant or bot generated, but I'm going to really evaluate this in the context of a broader picture, a broader strategy, or my tactical operations, or my own knowledge, and figure out where I can use this to, again, come back in depth to that word augment. Where can I use this to augment my capabilities as opposed to replace a function that I used to do? It's not a full replacement. It's an augmentation capability.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, because I think that was some of the fear, you know, as this was introduced, and then you get, you know, media outlets with some elements of FUD, you know, that fear, uncertainty, and doubt, where it was, oh, this is replacing, you know, entire industries. And ultimately, you know, I think there's, as we've mentioned, that it's part of the toolkit, right? It's a universal tool, has great capability, great capacity, but ultimately there is a conscience behind ultimately the decisions that we need to make in certain areas. But as we go down this path, Randy, you know, the final question for this episode for you, your future trends and innovation. You know, we've mentioned some with the security researchers right now, but what are you seeing potentially in the future with AI integrated cybersecurity defender capability?
Yeah, you know, it's a hard one to address. You know, I think we have to look at the community as a whole. You know, recently CIS hosted the ISAC annual meeting. We had an amazing guest speaker, Shohini Goza, who came in and talked about the future of quantum computing, what quantum is. And I don't think we can really have a discussion about what's the future of AI without considering things that are happening around it. And quantum is certainly one of those things. Nanotechnology is one of those things. Bio, the kind of the integration of the bioengineering aspect of, like, could we use, you know, biomedical devices and computer chips going forward? When you think about all those kinds of things, that's really a space where AI is probably going to fit in really well, because we're talking about, again, for a scale issue where humans just, we essentially still have caveman brains in a lot of ways, right? And this tech, we have this godlike technology around us. There's no way that we can evolve as quickly as our technology is evolving. So AI is going to help us be able to scale and understand some of these things when quantum is allowing faster and faster processing, and nanotech's allowing faster processing, and the scale of data is going to increase exponentially. If we're at 74 gigs a day today, or 75 gigs of data taking in the average person today, what is that going to be in 3 years? 100 gigs, 150 gigs of data a day, right? That's where AI is really going to come into play. I think it's going to help us manage these economies of scale when it comes to data movement, not just in cybersecurity, I think everywhere, availability, beyond all that. So I think there's going to be a lot of military application for AI as well. So, you know, paying a lot of attention, obviously, to geopolitical events, seeing where, you know, AI is being used, or elements of AI, machine learning and deep learning and things like that being used to enhance military operations, not just in some conflicts happening in today in Europe and the Middle East, but thinking about the Pacific theater as well in the future. Now, obviously, Taiwan has a big part of their economy is based around chip manufacturing. So that's of great interest to some world powers. And I think AI will play a big part in military application and the protection of Taiwan. So a lot of stuff on the horizon, Sean. A lot of stuff.
There is. There's a lot more for us to talk about, Randy.
We haven't talked Terminator yet, right? So
right. We've not talked about that. We've not talked about Judgment Day. Again, Randy, I appreciate the thoughts and your insight into AI from the Defender's capability. Great work. Again, we'll obviously, I'm pushing, and I'd love to hear back from the audience, podcast@cisecurity.org, to get Randy also hosting some podcasts for us as well. Love to get your feedback. Thank you, Randy. And again, thank you to our audience. This is Sean Atkinson. Remember to subscribe in all the usual ways. New episodes every Wednesday. And with that, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show today. The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS. If you're interested in learning more about how to grow your cybersecurity program, the free tools available to help you on your journey, or to get involved with the CIS volunteer community, visit our website, cisecurity.org. Start secure and stay secure.